Welcome to the Currency.News Energy Matters podcast, powered by Pinergy.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of Energy Matters, a new podcast brought to you by The Currency and powered by Pinergy. My name is Ian Keogh, and over the course of this series, we will investigate the Irish energy sector, how we've reached the point we are in, what we could have done in the past, and perhaps what we should have done in the past. But we'll also look at what needs to be done now and what the future holds. We're going to look at how you can better use your energy, reduce your bills, and create a more sustainable energy sector. We look at topics such as renewables and what the future of transport might look like. We're going to hear from a wide variety of voices and have a wide variety of debates. In the first episode, we're going to be answering a very basic question. How did we get here? And to do that, I'm delighted to be joined today for the first episode by Enda Gunnell, the Chief Executive of Pinergy, and also by Stephen Kinsella, Professor of Economics at the University of Limerick. Enda, Stephen, you're both very welcome.
Thank you, Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
Stephen, I'm going to start with yourself. I was reading a column at the weekend, and it was entitled Winter is Coming: How Geopolitics and Climate Change Have Combined for a Perfect Storm for Natural Gas. And it's by Konstantin Gurdjieff, and it says that European energy markets are in the middle of a crisis. The crisis is not existential yet, but it's brought about by a squeeze on wholesale prices, volatile demands and loads of uncertainty, not to mention geopolitics. This was written 19 months ago, long before Ukraine had been invaded by Russia, spiralling out of control now, and the gas prices. This crisis, Stephen, if we can call it that, has been a long time coming.
I would argue that it's not a crisis. What we're seeing is an evolution of factor markets, particularly with respect to energy. If you look at the long-term structural shifts that are happening in our economies across the world, you're seeing a movement away from fossil fuels. You're seeing the resurgence of the nuclear debate. You're seeing, obviously, the volatility caused by Ukraine. But fundamentally, what's happening is people are waking up to the reality of the limits of fossil fuel technologies. And what is waking them up is the price mechanism. The price of everything shooting up as a result of Vladimir Putin's actions, and also because of our domestic market concerns, has everybody all of a sudden wondering what's going to happen. I am surrounded by people in Limerick who are currently installing solar panels into their homes who would never have done so but for the volatility to their energy bills caused by Putin. So what we're seeing is the price mechanism working to accelerate what was already a transformation in progress, which is what Konstantin's article, I believe, was about.
Enda, it seems, you know, we have this current cost of living crisis largely as a result of spiralling energy prices. But it goes way back further than that. You've been talking about a looming issues for 2-3 years.
Yeah, I think we're at a point now where energy, probably for the first time ever, or at least since 74, 75, the last energy crisis, is front page news. It's the topic of conversation among people, and it's part of a broader cost of living crisis or discussion. But we've been predicting, I suppose, or concerned about increasing energy costs over the last number of years. And I think the last number of years have been very interesting and transformative in terms of where costs have gone. And I suppose that if you look back in a little bit in time and come to the COVID crisis in early 2020. You know, before that, things were fairly normal within the energy markets, and suddenly, on the back of COVID, energy markets and energy demand completely changed. So you had effectively overnight a global collapse in demand for energy, and an associated collapse in the price of energy. And at that time, people were commenting about how quickly we as a society can change things, and the knock-on effect of that. And people were commenting that this is a once-in-a-generational step away from fossil fuels. We're now seeing considerable drop in demand for fossil fuels, and this is great for the energy transition, et cetera, et cetera. And I suppose, you know, from our point of view in a business, you know, you had bought power forward, and suddenly the commodity-based price of power has changed overnight. And that led on to a situation through 2020 into 2021, when we started to come out of COVID, or the lockdowns were relaxed and demand started to increase across different sectors at different paces, a re setting of supply and demand within the energy markets. But then in Ireland, we started to have local supply or security of supply issues around our generation plant is old. Much of it is coming near end of life. Some of the most fossil fuel dependent peat plants, for example, have been closed. And perhaps, and partly because of the COVID lockdown, we weren't able to maintain some of that plant. So some key infrastructure was out of action almost for the whole of 2021, which meant that we were using more expensive fossil fuel-based generation plant to supply and to meet the demand in the economy. And on the back of that, prices started to go up again. And then around quarter three of 2021, we started to see the emergence of the geopolitical issues between Russia and Europe. And this is not something that started on the 24th of February. This has been going on well over a year at this stage, where supply of gas and the associated volatility, uncertainty around gas supplies from Russia into Europe were starting to push prices up. Because ultimately, gas in the markets today, fortunately or unfortunately, is treated as a commodity, when in fact, gas and our energy should be treated as a resource.
Just on Stephen's point, I wouldn't call it a crisis. What's your view on that? I know it's difficult to say to people who are seeing their bills go up and struggling to pay for them, but yeah. on a more systemic level.
Yeah, I think Stephen is right. You know, what we're seeing here is a price mechanism. It's a market that is dominated by the price of gas. And ultimately, there's so much uncertainty. There's so many issues around the supply chains of gas, whether and we will ever buy gas through Russia again. And, you know, Europe had a dependency of about 40% of its gas through Russia. But yes, it's a commodity. That commodity is internationally traded and it's going up in price because of uncertainty and a whole raft of issues. And that price factor is causing a crisis in the economy here, or in society, I would say, rather than the economy. Because our customers are struggling to pay for their energy costs. And I think, you know, the government responses in terms of putting supports to both businesses and to households are absolutely necessary because people are struggling with this. So while it might be, in economic terms, a single factor caused issue around price, it is hitting people hard in their pockets, in their businesses, and it's, you know, questioning the ability of households to meet their costs and some businesses to maintain stability.
And we'll come to some of the things that you know, the policy suggestions and changes that we can do to the market to improve things in a while. Stephen, Enda's been mentioned here about the security of supply crisis, the gas crisis, the war in Ukraine. Ultimately, prices are rocketing. Is this a policy failure, given we've been talking about these issues for so long? And why is it a policy failure, if so?
Well, I guess the first thing to say is, you know, a crisis is typically defined as a decisive point when things change, right? And on that basis, this isn't a crisis because nothing has particularly changed. What's happened is that we have realized that this thing that we assume to be less scarce than it actually is has been shown to be less scarce, you know, and people are hurting as a result. But in terms of the main question about policy failures, the main policy failure is just the inability of the system and our policymakers to listen to the repeated and concerted and frankly, almost monotone utterances from the sector saying exactly as what Enda has been saying. The plant is getting old. We need to invest in renewables. We need to have a regulatory framework for offshore wind. These are not things that it takes a genius to figure out we need. But the system has failed in every single year to plan for what is a relatively certain future. It failed again in the current budget, in budget 2023, the future budget, to think in a more long-term and coherent manner. And in so doing, it has exposed us to the risks of the domestic market not being able to keep up with the demands that the system is going to place on it. You know, I mean, Enda is far better a position to comment than me. But even as an outsider to this, I can see that you had a vast increase in the demands on energy from all sectors, households, businesses, large scale businesses like data centers, and you had no concomitant increase in investment in supply. And therefore, you're going to have, you're going to come to a point of imbalance where things are just much, much more difficult to provide. And by difficult, I mean expensive to provide. And that's exactly where we're at now. We're not looking at brownouts or potential brownouts this winter because of Vladimir Putin, right? We're looking at those because the energy markets itself wasn't or isn't designed to cope with the demand and supply issues that it actually has.
Let's look at that design of the market, because I think sometimes it's easy to have a simplistic debate. You know, Vladimir Putin invades Ukraine, and we can even talk about COVID or security of supply. But it goes way back further than that, to how the market was actually set up. And, you know, if we go back to the early noughties, deregulation and how the markets were structured really set a lot of what's going on in train.
It did, yeah. And I suppose in the early noughties, moving from a state monopoly to an open market for the provision of power and energy was a transformational change at that point in time. But I think at that point in time, we were in a fossil fuel dominated society, and the market is geared around a fossil fuel world. And I suppose, you know, as what Stephen is saying there, a lot of this stuff has been flagged in the past that we need, and we are moving towards a renewable based energy supply in the future. And I think the market mechanisms need to just move on and reflect that. You know, obviously where I'm at as an energy supplier, buying power in the wholesale market, that wholesale market dictates the price of power is largely set with reference to the price of gas. Ireland is, you know, quite advanced when it comes to renewables. And in certain respects, it's world leading in terms of how it has dealt with renewables. But you know, while we might be using 30-35% of our power sources coming from renewable, all of it is priced with reference to gas. And we're in a, you know, through the climate action plans, we're moving towards an 80% renewable world. And in an 80% renewable world, pricing our power based on gas just does not make sense. Gas is a commodity. In reality, energy is a resource, and we need to change the market structures accordingly. And I think going back to Stephen's point there and some of the if there's blackouts this summer or this winter, they're not going to be caused by Vladimir Putin. I would agree with that. And I think one of the challenges we have here in Ireland is that, you know, we're good at policy announcements. We're good at being seen to talk about doing the right things in the future and move towards renewables. But the pace of that change is incredibly slow. We get in our own way. Our ways of doing things get in the way, be it planning. We should be at the forefront of offshore wind generation. Onshore wind generation has effectively stalled, I'd say, for the last 5 or 6 years, predominantly around planning. And do people really want onshore wind? But I think the reality is we've got to move away from a fossil fuel dominated world fast.
Stephen, your views on renewables. Are we underdeveloped? I was interested in what Enda said, that, you know, we're actually doing a lot of good stuff, but we have the capacity to be actually exporters of this stuff and to be really shore up our own energy security.
The extraordinary policy failure, Ian, is that we're not already exporting huge amounts of power from this island. I was speaking to a colleague in Europe over the weekend, and they just shake their heads at some of the own goals that Ireland has been able to score against itself over the last few years. And offshore wind is the biggest by far. They cannot understand why this is not the only topic of discussion around government all the time, because it's the economic benefits, the potential of this is so incredible that we're constantly talking about, you know, a fiver on child benefit and, you know, 12 quid on the pension. And we don't realize that there are multiple billions and even trillions of euros just blowing across the island for want of a better planning regime, for want of words on a page. It's not even a money problem. The private sector will resource the capital intensity and the capital expenditure that's required to build these things. We just have to make sure that we're in a position to actually get out of our own way, as Enda says. And it's a source of much annoyance to me that we can't simply see the potential when it's there and just go and get it, because it's not beyond us to do it. If the Danes can do it, we can absolutely do it.
I've been reading, I've been looking, I've been, you know, solar panels, there's constant planning battles over it. Every time, you know, we do wind turbines, there's offshore issues. I take your point that we are actually investing in it, but we don't seem to be investing near enough, and there is a massive logjam.
Yeah, no, we are doing some amount of stuff, but we're not doing enough. But I think what's really interesting out of this crisis is the increasing public demand for renewables, for people to take control of their own power sources, because the technology is there. It's getting cheaper. It has got cheaper over the last 10 years. And other countries are doing this. And, you know, there is a strong public demand in households and in businesses to take control and generate their own power needs.
You mentioned there, you know, there's a public clamour for it. There's a public clamour for it because bills are going up. Mm. And I think if you look at it, Eurostat reported for the last few years that we have the fourth most expensive energy in Europe. You know, ultimately, homes, SMEs are paying too much for energy in Ireland. Why is it specifically Ireland, and what can we do?
Well, as an energy market, we're a small island on the periphery of Europe, so our geographic location doesn't help us in terms of cost efficiency. But, you know, the big determinant in terms of the cost of power is ultimately the price of gas at the moment. So that is a big factor in where we're at. But we have been at the more expensive end for a number of years. So the power trades on wholesale markets, open markets. But then on top of that, you have network charges, you have PSO levies, you have other infrastructural costs that are incurred centrally and spread out across society. And that is part of the cost measure that people are bearing.
We were chatting before, Enda, and you were talking about, you know, the structural change that needs to happen within the industry. And at the moment, I think you put it to me that market structures at present protect generators, but it needs to protect and serve customers. Now, that sounds nice, but what does that mean in practice? What do we need to change around the system?
Well, the markets were, back to the early noughties, the markets were set up and designed, and ultimately they're there to protect the generators. The generators are at the starting point of the supply chain. There's a big capital cost in terms of putting this infrastructure in place, and that cost needs to be recovered, and those people need to be protected. But it means that the way the market is structured, the suppliers are at the customer end. We're at the forefront of the challenges that businesses and households are making. And we've got to structure our finances in a way that meet market rules, which are designed to protect the generators. But the first infrastructural point in terms of why households and businesses are paying too much is the dominance of gas in the price of power, particularly in a market where we're trying to increase our penetration of renewables, where, you know, on a particularly windy day, we might be able to supply 70% of our demand from wind or renewable sources. Yet that last 30% or 20%, whatever it is on a given point in time, is set with reference to gas prices. So there's a bias there towards high costs associated with gas. Ultimately, that means that we're paying more than we need to do if the policy measures were in place for long enough and we were further advanced on the transition towards renewables.
Stephen, just your views on that, because I know the government is talking, you know, about very, very ambitious renewables targets, but we don't seem to have any sort of implementation mechanism for it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been around the system long enough to know that, announcements are they're not even worth the paper that they're printed on. You have to look at the legislation, you have to look at the action plan, you have to look at how it's actually implemented, or as is most of the time, isn't implemented. The market design probably made sense 20 plus years ago when you had large scale investments in gas required and you needed to make sure that those people got their returns back. They probably have at this point. Any gas producer in the world is making supernormal profits at the moment. For me, I do like the idea, or maybe it's just a suggestion, maybe Enda could flesh it out, about separating gas as a commodity from the overall energy generation. So what's actually happening is, in the market, you pay the price that people see is the marginal cost of the production of gas. So it doesn't really help the renewable producers, really, that except sometimes offering them windfall profits or uplift prices, as they're called. So I think it's far better to consider separating the markets out. Maybe there's a government mandated emergency gas generation system, because we're never going to get to 100% renewables, obviously. And maybe the rest of it is just private renewables. And if you separate those two things out, the customers are massively resourced to generate their own power via solar or wind, micro generation systems. And then you have large scale offshore and onshore wind producers that are delivering lots and lots of benefits. And then every so often you spin up the gas plant when the weather isn't when the weather isn't conducive. That seems to me to be a very good admixture that would end up with much lower prices for the consumer.
Yeah, and I think what we're seeing at the moment in Brussels is probably a seminal debate as to how the energy markets will be structured for the next 20, 25 years. Because clearly at this point in time, the market structures that were designed 20, 25 years ago are not fit for purpose today. What's key as part of that is I think there has to be a recognition, and there is an increasing recognition in Ireland now, that gas has a part to play in our power requirements going forward. But it's not going to be the dominant and can't be the dominant source of our power in the future. So what's going on at the moment in terms of non-gas-based power, and whether those generators are top-sliced, the supernormal profits that they're making are taken centrally and used then to support businesses and households in terms of meeting their energy costs. That's a very real discussion. Market design like this is not something that should be changed overnight. The problem is we're trying to change it overnight in response to an energy crisis or to gas being used as a weapon of war. But the market does need to change. It needs to reflect the fact that hopefully going forward, 70-80% of all our power requirements will come from renewables. Microgeneration, people generating their own power at home, has to be a major part of that. We have to change the regulations here to allow people to trade power between each other, community power, peer-to-peer trading. That requires regulatory change. The planning, we talked about it already, the whole planning side of things needs to change. We need to move fast on offshore, but there's no point in creating more offshore capacity if we can't actually use it. There's no point in building this infrastructure and then turning it off or curtailing it. We have to beef up the grid to be able to be functional in a 70-80% renewable market. So there's huge market changes, and that debate has now been fast-tracked. So I think a lot of the measures, there may well need to be interim or temporary measures while the long-term solution is put in place as well.
Yeah, and absolutely, and we are at that time of change long-term, but there is that political need and a societal need to do something, and you mentioned there about temporary measures. What would you like to see happening to ensure more stable pricing for energy users?
Well, that's the ultimate question as to what do we do now. From my perspective, I think it's imperative that we come up with a long-term solution to separate the price of gas from the price of power. In a world where we were using fossil fuels predominantly as the source of our power, using gas as a reference point for that made sense. In a world going forward where we're looking at 70-80% of our power requirements coming from renewable sources, it does not make sense to use gas as the reference point for that. In addition to that, I think we have to do all that we can to recognise that we can't be wasting power. We've got to be efficient in terms of how we use power and ultimately bring down that demand for gas. But they're the two things that are required going forward, in my opinion.
Stephen, finally for you, long-term crisis, what are the short-term solutions Are you in favour of a cap on energy pricing? Would you like to see more government intervention in the market, more European intervention at this point?
I think more intervention is inevitable. I think we're going to see a large scale intervention by both the European and national governments over the next 6 to 12 months. These are all sticking plasters that don't get at the true heart of the problem, which is fundamentally market design.
And finally, we started this podcast by talking about how did we get to where we are, but where are we going next?
I think we're facing into a very challenging winter in terms of the price, the sheer price of power. I think locally here we have some issues around the security of supply, and hopefully we will get through that period. But we really need to get our house in order. We need to recognise that we've got to move away from fossil fuels finally. We've got to invest in our grid to make sure that we can't have a situation like this in the future. And we've got to start implementing the policies that have been announced in the past at pace immediately.
Essentially make use of the crisis.
Absolutely.
Enda Cunnell, CEO of Pinergy, and Stephen Kinsella, thank you very much for joining me here today on the first episode of Energy Matters, brought to you by The Currency and powered by Pinergy.
You've been listening to the Currency.news Energy Matters podcast, powered by Pinergy.